Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 771 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
I'm Manny.
And this is your new Comics Wednesday episode for March 20th, 2019. But before we get into a few of the books that are going to hit stands today that we think you might be interested in, just a quick reminder, this episode of the Comic Source is brought to you by Aftershock Comics, the independent comics and graphic novel publisher sending shockwaves throughout your local comic shop with groundbreaking series like A Walk Through Hell by Garth Ennis and Goren Tsuzuka, Animosity by Marguerite Bennett and Raphael Della Torre, Baby Teeth from Donnie Cates and Gary Brown, and new must-reads like Oberon from Ryan Parrott and Miloš Slavkovic, Dark Red from Tim Seeley and Corin Howell. First issue hit stands today. We'll be talking about it in just a few minutes. And also upcoming series like Orphanage, What Happens When Everyone 13 and Older Suddenly Dies All Around the World. We're going to find out just how different society looks 20 years after this catastrophe in this new title from Ted Anderson and Nino Plotti. And I hope you guys all listened to our most recent Aftershock Monday episode where I got to talk to Ted about his recently concluded Moth and Whisper title from Aftershock, as well as what we can expect from Orphanage. It sounds really, really interesting, and I can't wait to dive in. So be sure you check out All That's Shaking at AftershockComics.com, and remember to read dangerously. That's the Aftershock motto this year, and the titles, the quality of titles, and the diversity of titles, and what you can always count on from Aftershock in terms of quality and interesting stories is the fact that all their books, all their stories, all their narratives really have an edge to them. They're something different. They're not your regular run-of-the-mill comic publisher and not your regular run-of-the-mill comic stories. So we're a big believer in them. Do yourself a favor. Go to AftershockComics.com and browse through the titles, find something you like and something that catches your eye and give it a try. They really do put out some high-quality books. So anything you want to add to that, Manny?
Just the fact that Aftershock offers just a wide variety of titles. I mean, you have books like Pestilence all the way to Animosity and Rough Riders and everything in between. I mean, there's something for everyone. And kind of like you've already mentioned before, these are a lot of writers with passion projects. So, I mean, the quality is just top-notch. Really, really good stuff.
Yeah, one of your favorite titles, Super Zero. I had a little Super Zero flashback. I think it was yesterday or the day before. Jimmy Palmiotti was talking about the fact that him and Amanda just got home from, I think they were in Monaco for a comic convention, and then they stayed there for like another week or so, because I think the convention wasn't this past weekend, but it was the weekend before, the weekend of, I guess, the 9th it would have been. And they stayed this following week, the week of the 11th through the 16th, just to do some sightseeing and check everything out. And then they got home this last weekend. And Jimmy was talking about how his entire house and the surrounding area was filled with honeybees. There were just honeybees everywhere. And I told him, I was like, Jimmy, it's the universe trying to tell you that it's time to bring back Super Zero, trying to give you superpowers. Honey-based superpowers, because you remember Drew, you know, with the whole irradiated ants and that cover.
Yeah.
She had all the little, so could see her doing that, you know, trying to get stung by 1,000 bees to get superpowers. So be pretty funny. Speaking of conventions, we should mention that coming up the last weekend of the month of March, the 29th, 30th and 31st is WonderCon in Anaheim, Manny's favorite convention of all time, still his favorite, despite the fact that San Diego Comic-Con does dwarf it in size. San Diego's much bigger and more things to do. There's a certain charm about WonderCon. It's a little smaller. It's not as crazy. And I always encourage people, if you are one of those people that always wants to go to San Diego Comic-Con, but you're never able to get badges, you're never able to get tickets to go, or you're worried that you've never tried to get tickets because you're worried that you can't handle the crowds or what have you. WonderCon is like San Diego Light in a lot of ways. There's enough enough multimedia stuff there to give you sort of the feel and flavor of San Diego. I mean, don't get me wrong, nothing really compares to San Diego because it spills out into the streets of the gas lamp and there's all kinds of other stuff going on. But in terms of just what's on the convention floor, panels, vendors, cosplay, Artist Alley, WonderCon is a good substitute if you can't handle the madness of San Diego, or San Diego's too expensive, or you just haven't been able to get tickets. So I always encourage people to at least give it a try. And it's the show that I would say DC considers kind of their hometown show. And it's going to be curious to see what goes on at the DC booth this year, knowing that, I mean, San Diego, I have a feeling San Diego and the DC booth is going to be just a nightmare this year with them over in the Warner Brothers area, sharing with Warner Brothers. It's going to just suck. I just know it. They'll probably have way fewer signings with talent and probably fewer people there, and it's going to be crowded. I'm dreading it. I really am. And the other thing I wonder is, like, okay, so what are they going to do with that giant booth with the stage and like all that stuff? They're not going to need it over there at the Warner Brothers booth. So what are they going to do with it? Because you know at WonderCon, they use their smaller booth, the same one that they use at New York Comic Con. So I guess it's going to sit in a warehouse somewhere. And they're not going to, you know what I mean? Because it's got that second story, and yeah, I don't know. It's going to be really strange. So it's going to be curious. I'm going to be curious to see how things are with now that AT&T's taken over Warner Brothers, if we're going to see any differences or notice any differences. So, but I'm looking forward to the show. Probably on the next few episodes that come out, we'll start talking about some of the specific things we're looking forward to. And obviously, we'll be bringing you a lot of coverage from the show. Be sure you're following us on social media, Twitter and Instagram for all the live photos. We'll be posting quite a bit, as we usually do, cosplay and just cool things we see, probably pictures with creators and stuff like that. Also, we're going to have some giveaways, as we always do at shows. We'll be giving away our exclusive Comic Source lanyards. Can't get them anywhere else but from us at a show. And maybe one or two other surprises, one or two other giveaways. I have some ideas. If anybody has ever gone to a panel that I've done, you know, there's a certain something I always like to give away, like I did last year at Los Angeles Comic Con. What is that what it's called now? Los Angeles Comic Con? It used to be Kamikaze. Anyway, if you were at that panel, if you're at that panel, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So I may have a few of those special items to give away at the show. Haven't decided how I'm going to do it yet. I was thinking maybe one for each day, and I'm not going to make it easy. It'll be like you have to track me down and give me like a secret code word or something, and then you'll. So again, you should be following us on Twitter. Follow us on Instagram, because when the time comes, that's probably how I'm going to do it. It's probably going to be clues on Twitter, kind of letting you know where I am, what area of the show I am, and then the first person to track me down will win the prize. But again, more details to come with that. And yeah, just really excited to go and see the show. I did find out today that there's kind of an early preview for press. Like super early in the morning on Friday. So I think the show, if I remember correctly, opens at noon on Friday, but I think there's a press preview at 8:45 a.m. So I think I'm going to be doing that. So again, just be sure you're tuned in to the social media. I'll be putting stuff up there, pictures and all kinds of stuff from the press preview. Give everybody an idea. Even if you're going to be at the show, you know, you're obviously not going to be able to be in there at 9 a.m. or 8:45. So a lot of previews, things like that, creators to talk to. So always looking forward to it. It's a really good time. Anything in particular you're looking for at WonderCon this year, Manny, or you just want to go get the convention season kicked off?
Well, the most important thing for me is going to be the Batman 80 year bash that they're going to be doing on Saturday. And then also see what they have going on with the DC Universe panel that they're going to have. And pretty much just, you know, another year at WonderCon. It's always a really, really, really good show. you know, knock on wood, but I've never had a bad experience at WonderCon. I mean, I've gotten some of my best sketch pieces there. So, you know, just we've sat through some really good panels, and so I just overall, it's gonna be another crazy busy year, but really looking forward to it.
Yeah, last year was the first year they had that addition with some really big panel rooms. And it was good and bad. Again, they're like really big panel rooms. You can have a lot of people and like big screens to look at the stuff, but so far to walk. More walking than ever last year at WonderCon. What's the Batman 80-year? Is that like a big panel with a bunch of Batman people on it?
Well, I'm not sure exactly. It was, funny, I should know more about it because I did the press release for DC for that. But it's gonna be pretty much, they're gonna be celebrating Batman's 80th year, because that's the exact date that he debuted. So at this year's WonderCon in Anaheim, the panel "Happy Birthday, Batman" will take place on the actual anniversary date of March 30th.
Wow.
So they're going to have some other giveaways and things like that. And he is one of my favorite superhero, and that's the week of. Also right before, they're going to be doing the midnight release of Detective 1000. So, I mean, I can't imagine that DC is just going to be really bat heavy at WonderCon, which is okay by me.
Yeah. Are you going to a midnight release for Detective 1000? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to be attending Legends Midnight Release in Fresno.
Yeah, I'm trying to decide if I'm going to do one as well. It's just,
man. You know, it's a quick funny story about Legends. Legends Comics and Collectibles in Fresno, they usually actually do retailer exclusive covers. And they had one this year set out for Batman. I forgot the artist's name, but one of the owners, his name is Brandon. He's a really cool guy. He showed me the original print of the Batman that they wanted to use for the retailer cover. So they sent it in and they submitted it like every other time. Didn't hear back. Then they heard back from DC, and you know how they own the likeness of Batman?
Yeah.
They said, "Hey, Legends, sorry, but we're actually going to be using this cover for one of our variants for one of the decades, so you can't use it for your retailer exclusive."
Wow.
Yeah. So that sucked. But I mean, they're going to use it still, but they don't have their retailer exclusive for Detective 1000.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah.
I was going to say something else about WonderCon, and I forgot what it was. But yeah, anyway, yeah, I'll probably do a midnight release too. I mean, I just hate to be up that late, because there's not really one close to my house. I mean, there's a lot of comic shops in my area, you know, Phoenix, but a lot of times I have to drive 30, 45 minutes. So I know you got a little bit of a drive to as well, but it's not too bad. Oh, the other thing I was going to say is for WonderCon, you know, they always debut a DC animated. They always have a world premiere, so I know they're going to be doing that again. Although I don't know what it is off the top of my head.
And it's the Batman Ninja Turtle one.
I could definitely skip that one. But the other thing is, I would be shocked if we didn't have a screening of Shazam. It's coming out April 15th. They already had a screening. I think it was last night or Monday night. They had the premiere. So. Yeah, I would be shocked if there wasn't a Shazam screening, you know, on one of the nights at a nearby theater. So I guess we'll find out. Anyway, yeah, be sure you're following us on Twitter. As I said, you want to get one of those lanyards or the gift I'm going to be giving away. Like I said, I'll have three of them, one for each day. And we'll see if I end up on any panels. I'll have a couple extras just in case. But let's go ahead and talk about some of the books that are coming out today. Why do you kick it off, Manny? What do you have up first?
So usually I try to wait for my book of the week for the end of the show. But this case, I'm going to start it off with it just because if you listen to the Comic Source podcast, which you should, you've already talked about this book. And I kind of begged you beforehand that I needed to at least mention the book because, I mean, Toyo Harada is my favorite Valiant character. And Joshua Dice Hart's book is finally coming out this week. The Life and Death of Toyo Harada, issue number one, which, like I said, written by Joshua Dice Hart, with artwork by Kafu and Miko Suyan, with colors by Andrew Dahlhaus. And I mean, this is going to take us from his childhood and some of the current events that he is going through, trying to build his utopia. Now, I don't really want to talk too much about it just because, like I said, you should have already listened to Valiant Sundays. And if you haven't, go back and take a look at it, take a listen at it, whatever, listen to it and check out the, you know, the, what Jace talks about for that book coming out tomorrow. But what I will say is that, I mean, it's going to, bring back some of my favorite characters that from Imperium and other series like, Grave Dog, who was a former Rising Spirit, soldier, and then also Broken Angel, who was a scientist, and then Mech Major, the robot, and then also Lord Vine 99. I mean, they all make their presence felt in this issue. So it feels like a continuation from Imperium. And if you haven't read Imperium, I do recommend that you go back and read it just because it's a really good series, also by Joshua Dice Hart. It has various artists on it, and it's just a solid story with the introduction to some of these characters that I already talked about that are very, very important to Toyo Harada's master plan, because they pretty much do his bidding. But in this issue, he's still trying to connect his elevator to space in order to get to all that. I wouldn't call it space junk, but technology, and his battles with the ever-growing number of nations that are against him. So very excited for this. In case you are going to WonderCon next weekend, do they have a Valiant booth this year, Jace?
I don't think they have a booth, but I know for sure they have a couple panels.
No, because, I mean, usually they have a booth there, but they usually have really good sales on trade paperbacks, and that's one of the ones I would highly recommend to pick up. Really great artwork and fantastic storytelling. I'm just going to keep it short and sweet because you should go back and listen to that podcast. Life and Death of Toyo Harada, my book of the week. Super excited. And the only thing that sucks is that we're privy to some previews and things like that. So book comes out tomorrow, we have to wait so much longer for the next one, kind of. So, support this book. And I know that this is supposed to be, you know, his last hurrah, but I would like to think that that's just a lie.
Yeah, I mean, Jesse and I, as Manny said, we've talked about it on Valiant Sunday a couple times. Most recently, this last Valiant Sunday, obviously spoiler free. We want you to be able to pick up the book and enjoy it for yourself. But we did speculate on, you know, the death part. Is it the death of his dream? Could it be he appears to die, but really we see him go off in hiding. I speculated that maybe he goes into hiding for many years and returns as the Bleeding Monk. Maybe he's the Bleeding Monk. So anyway, there's a lot of different ways it could go, but it's definitely a great book, and you should certainly pick it up. But yeah, like Manny mentioned, Valiant does have some really great deals on trade paperbacks at shows. Like by far the best deal of any publisher at a show. You basically... Okay, first of all their volume ones are always $10, but you buy three and you get two free. So that means you get five volume one trade paperbacks for $30, which comes out to $6 a trade, which is just ridiculous. Like most places, most publishers, a trade is $20. And so even if you find it at half off, you're still paying $10, and it's still more than you would pay at Valiant for their deal. The the 5 for $30. So as I said, I don't think they have a booth at WonderCon. WonderCon's going to be different this year too, Manny, just in terms of it's the gauntlet right now. I know for a fact that Ryan Cady and Todd Nock are both running the full gauntlet. A lot of creators are only doing two. And what I mean by gauntlet is last weekend we had Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle. This coming weekend we have C2E2 in Chicago. And then the following weekend we have WonderCon in Anaheim. Those are all really great shows. They tend to be comic centric and attract really good creators and a lot of fans that love comics, especially Emerald City and C2E2, because they don't have the proximity to the multimedia stuff, the movie and TV. Like, that's one thing about Anaheim and why Manny and I kind of refer to it as San Diego Light, because even though it is a smaller show, it's on par with, you know, a Baltimore or a Heroes Con or a C2E2 or an Emerald City. But the reason it gets so much TV and movie stuff is because it's right there in Anaheim, like right next door to Hollywood. So it's easy for the studios to do stuff. So these three shows all right in a row is pretty tough. People, as I said, they've been having to make choices on maybe I only do one, maybe I only do two. And a few people are crazy and they're doing three. I would like to have done, I mean, I hear great things about Emerald City and Chicago. I'd love to do one or both of those some year, but this was not the year with them back to back to back. So, so yeah, that's part of the reason that DeValiant doesn't have a booth at WonderCon, because they exhibited at Emerald City and they're exhibiting at C2E2. So if you're going to be at either one of those shows, definitely go and take advantage of that deal that we were talking about. But I think because of that, that's the reason they're not at at WonderCon doing a booth. They're not exhibiting, but they, as I said, they will have panels. They will have some people there. So I'm sure that we will we'll see some of our Valiant friends and hang out, and spend some time with them, I'm sure. All right, on to my first book that I'm going to talk about. It's from writer Tim Seeley with art by Corin Howell. And I apologize, I don't have the colorist or the letterer's name, because the preview copy I got was from quite a while back. It was a really advanced copy and it doesn't have all the creators listed. I didn't get the most recent preview copy that I normally get on Friday. So apologies for not having the rest of the creative team. But I really did enjoy this book. Just to give you sort of an idea what it's about, the main character is a vampire. It's called Dark Red. The main character is a vampire. He lives in this small, tiny little town called Falls End. And he works, first of all, it's a vampire, and he has a job. And it's not only does he have a job, it's not a glamorous job at all. He works at a 24-hour gas station in a mini mart. And when we first meet him, he's literally mopping the floor. And he ends up having to stay late and mop up after some drunk guy came in to buy snacks and vomited all over the floor. And, you know, he tells his boss, he's like, you know, the one thing that I told you, the one requirement I had was I have to leave on time every day, because he's racing the sun, right? And so it's tough for him, right? First of all, he's a vampire, immortal, has to drink blood, and he's working at a mini mart. So it's what I didn't expect. I mean, it was an interesting premise to me. Here's this guy who lives in middle America. He's a vampire. And even though he's a vampire, his politics, his outlook is very much aligned with a lot of middle America in terms of like conservative and sort of, I don't want to say looking down on urban people, but just having a different set of values. And he does that not only with regular people, but also with vampires, you know, the urbanite vampires who live the glamorous life. And he looks down on that. So I didn't necessarily expect as much kind of overt politics. And maybe politics is not the right word, but just it becomes very apparent what he thinks of his brethren that live in the city. And as I said, the different values. And I don't know. I thought I didn't expect that to be such a big part of the story. But it makes it interesting in terms of making it really, really relevant to a lot of what's going on in the world right now. So as I said, I didn't necessarily expect that, but it made for a really interesting read. And then, of course, we, you know, you throw in the horror aspect of it, and, you know, Tim Seeley, between his revival title and Hack and Slash, he's always been a writer that handles that kind of story really, really well. And Corin Howell, I've only ever seen her work before on, what is it, Batmite, I think is what I saw her, or was it Bizarro? I don't know. It was one of those two. It was either Batmite with Dan Jurgens or it was Bizarro with Heath Corson. But either way, you know, much more of a humor title and not one that really kind of showcased kind of the action and horror that we get in this book. So I was really impressed with the artwork. Thought the coloring was handled very well also. In a way, no big surprise because it is an Aftershock book. So, you know, you expect something different, something with a little bit of an edge and quality art, and this one didn't disappoint. So I would say definitely give it a chance. Pick up issue one, at least flip through it when you head to your comic shop today. See if it catches your eye and check it out. You got a chance to read it, Manny. What did you think of Dark Red?
I got through about half of it, but the problem that it's taking me so long to get through it is because I've really liked the artwork on it, and so I've kind of spent a little bit too much time looking panel to panel, and so I'm going to reserve my comments for it for now.
All right, fair enough. What do you have up next?
Up next, I have Bitterroot number 5 from Image Comics, written by David F. Walker, Chuck Brown, with art by Sanford Green. And I think that it should have had the colorist, and for some reason I do not. Oh, Rico Renzi, and also Sanford Green. So this issue 5 is the last issue of this arc, and pretty much what it's done here, it's been a really, really good series. And to be honest, I'm not really sure exactly how it caught my attention when I first picked this up, being that I don't think it's something that I would have just necessarily picked up something out of the stands. But obviously the story has been about this family, the Sangers, who have pretty much protected the world from these creatures called the Jinnu, which are people who have been consumed by hate, infected by evil, and then transformed into monstrous creatures, which they then go ahead and save. It takes place like in the 30s, and it's their legacy. It's been done by generations that they do this, but now that they've been facing a stronger adversary in Dr. Sylvester and his assistants, who have found a way to use other emotions to make stronger beasts. But throughout the series, we've seen the different forms of hate, different forms of anger create these different creatures, some more powerful than others, and that the Sangreas have been fighting. And one of the more interesting relationships is between Ma Eda, who seems to be currently the matriarch of the family, who holds everyone together, the head of the family, and one of the other characters, I think her name is Blink. And so you can tell she's kind of the younger one, the naive one. And as the story has progressed, we have seen the way that she kind of has been guiding her along, teaching her how compassion for others and how to be patient, when to fight, when not to fight. And it's no different in issue 5. Issue 5 sees kind of the unification of the family, who were in a lot of different places. There's and sees them go head to head with Dr. Sylvester and the horde of Genu and other creatures that he has been able to transform. Another thing I really like about this book is the use of color to convey emotions. You see some panels in which one of the characters has been infected for a couple of issues now, and it's kind of has like a lighter green tone to kind of signify that like poison feel. There's another panel with civilians kind of at a really low point, and it kind of has like a really like a blue hue, and then a couple of other panels with excitement, and that's has a really lighter orange tone, and so on. I can go on and on about the different emotions, the different colors. So as you're reading it, you get a visual feel of what the characters are feeling emotionally, and then it goes on with the writing. So it's a really, really well balanced book, and it's a really good storytelling. And it comes together really nicely. I'm not going to give it away or anything. But I really look forward to a second arc. Want to see, where they go from here, and, what the future holds for the Sangreers, now that they know that it's not only hate that can create these genus, but other emotions as well.
Yeah, you know, I read the first issue, maybe the first two of that, and then I totally like fell off. I haven't been following it at all, but I've been hearing good things. So I have a David F. Walker book coming up later in the show, also, and I think he's a really underrated writer. Yeah, definitely check it out. And Sanford Green, his style is so unique, and he gets a lot of credit for being incredibly talented, and it's well-deserved. All right, my next book is an Image book also. It's Middle West, issue number 5 from Scotty Young. The art is by Jorge Corona. Colors are by Jean-Francois Bellu. And the letters are by Nate Picos of Blambot. I've really been enjoying this title. I think the first issue was the strongest issue so far. And it's not that the other issues are bad, but the first issue, it really, really grabbed you. And then I feel like issue 2 was kind of the story of the kid, Abel, kind of starting his journey. Let's say. So it was a lot about putting the different characters in their place so that they could really start on their path, so to speak. Like, first issue was introduction to this interesting world, and incredible art by Jorge Corona. So again, it really grabbed you. But then issue 2 is a little bit of a slower paced story because, again, everybody's being put in their place. And then issue 3 started to ramp up. Issue 4 continued that with the pace of the story increasing even a little more. And we had a big climax right at the end, almost a cliffhanger. And then issue 5 picks up with a little bit of a flashback to sort of flesh out a little bit more of Abel and his father, Dale. And then we get to that cliffhanger and get the resolution of that. And from there, we meet more of the supporting cast, this growing supporting cast from this world that Corona and Scotty Young are creating. That's really interesting, like very likable, interesting characters. And from there, you start seeing sort of the path that the story may take, and you start getting some insight and understanding into some of these other supporting characters, and also the emotions that Abel's going through, and kind of an idea of who he is and who he may grow into. Because again, he's only like, you know, 13 years old or whatever. So he obviously has a lot of growing up to do, but at that age, you know, I can remember being that age and thinking that I knew not everything, but I knew a lot. Like, I think at that age, you have such a sense of self and such sometimes a sense of confidence and bravado. You don't realize how little you actually know. That comes with like the wisdom of age. And so I think more than anything, what Scotty Young is capturing in the story he's telling is that feeling of being that age. Like, he just, the mood and tone of the story, and you can tell it's a coming of age kind of story. Abel's trying to learn about himself. There's so many things that are unexplained that he doesn't understand, that he's trying to get help for. He's trying to solve these problems, but it's all infused with this bravado. Like I said, with as much as Abel knows he needs help, he also thinks he's much more capable and kind of more in charge of the situation than he actually is. You know, as I said, with the wisdom of age, we can look at this and really understand just how far in over his head Abel is. Whereas from the perspective of him in the story, I think he believes that he's kind of deciding his path and he has some control over his fate and his destiny and what happens to him. But from our perspective, we realize how little control he actually has. So you take that really interesting story that I think is relatable, and you put it in this world that reminds me of nothing so much as Frank L. Baum's Wizard of Oz, like the Land of Oz. It's really an interesting world where, you know, magic exists, and magic exists along like steampunk looking robots. And it's a very interesting world. And Jorge Corona's art is so perfectly suited to tell this story. Normally, this type of art, I don't go in for it because it's not like super clean lines. It's not like traditional comic book art. But this isn't a traditional story. And the thing that really helps out with Corona's art is the way that he exaggerates anatomy and expression, and it really works for this type of story. I mean, it is really, really spectacular, and I can't say enough great things about this book. I think it's one of those titles that maybe is a little bit under the radar of everybody. A lot of people I know in the industry, like other creators, have read it and have loved it. But as far as comic book readers, I don't see a lot of people talking about it. And it may be one of those later that people discover either in trade or it's just for whatever reason catches on a little bit later. I mean, I think the first issue or two have gone back to second printing, so I know that they did relatively well. But based on the quality of the story, it's one that everybody should be talking about like every single time a new issue hits the stands. And beyond those first couple issues, I haven't really been hearing people talking about it. But this issue was spectacular. As I said, the pacing really started picking up, and I love this book. It is really, really outstanding, and I am like so invested in the story and the characters. I'm really, really impressed. You know, Scotty Young is more known for his artwork, especially his covers, you know, doing those like little Marvel type covers. He's not even handling the art here. You know, Jorge Corona is, and he's just getting to flex his writing muscles and show off his talent as a storyteller. And this is an excellent, excellent book. I can't recommend it highly enough. So did you get a chance to read Middle West 5, Manny?
No, actually, I'm still a couple of issues behind, so the first thing I'm going to do either tonight or after we're done here tomorrow morning is catch up on Middle West.
All right, what do you have up next?
So up next I have Vertigo's American Carnage number 5, written by one of my favorite writers, Brian Edward Hill, with artwork by Leandro Fernandez, colors by Dean White. Not sure where to start with this issue, because if it wasn't for Toyo Harada and me being such a fan, this would definitely, definitely be my pick for book of the week. I mean, if you want to break from reality and social issues and things that are going on in the world right now, American Carnage may not be the book for you. I mean, the way that Brian has told this story from the beginning, and just very, very subtly And sometimes just right in your face, put some themes in there about race, politics, wage classes. I mean, just a little bit of everything mixed up into one really, really good story, circling around the death of an FBI officer who was hung. It has been amazing. And the way it's all kind of weaving back together, it's been, I think it's just been such a great story. It's been, and then, Fernandez's artwork, combined with Hill's writing has made for some really, really dramatic, sequences of events. I mean, from the beginning of this issue, if you read 4, you know the state that Rick was left in after he was quote unquote shot, and you know what all that meant. And then Mr. Pace meeting with Special Agent Curry and his agenda and what it all means and who's trying to bring who down and what the reason is. I mean, just so much content in here, and it really shows just what a talented writer Brian Edward Hill is. And the cool thing about it is that it leaves you wanting more. Like it has all this great information in it, and it's just slowly moving the plot forward, not too fast, but not also too slow, and just enough to keep you wanting more. And some great cliffhangers. I mean, issue 4 had a really good cliffhanger. This issue, same thing, but it takes you in another direction. And what I really find interesting is one of the main characters. Senators. He's running for office. One of his lackeys is wearing an Obama mask, and I'm wondering, he's wearing it since the last issue, and I'm wondering if this is a foreshadowing to, Obama was kind of this ray of hope for a lot of people, but he was still part of that political machine. So even behind that smiling face, you know, he was still just another politician. If you really come to think about it, that's actually true. And so it really had me thinking about a bunch of other themes that maybe he was trying to throw in there. I know that he's done that in other books. I know in Postal he did that for a couple of issues near the end, and in other books as well. So, you know, it'd be a really fun book to talk to him about. And I can't wait for issue 6 to see where this is going. But it's a really, really interesting and complicated story that is complemented by really good artwork.
All right. Up next, I have also a Vertigo title. It's High Level Chapter 2 from writer Rob Sheridan. The pencil art is by Barnaby Bagenda. Color art is by Romulo Fajardo Jr. And the letters are by Nate Picos of Blambot. Really, really great book. I mean, I've been singing the praises of High Level since the first issue dropped. It's been a really fun ride. And you want to talk about quickly paced. Things kind of go south for Minnow and 13, the main characters here of High Level, in a hurry in this issue. So we get just a little bit of a flashback to start the title, like literally one page, to kind of give us some context. And then we have 13 talking to her old boyfriend, who has this mission for her, which is basically to protect this like child messiah and return her to High Level, which is sort of this mythical safe place in this post-apocalyptic world that Rob Sheridan has created. There's some people that don't even believe it exists. Others, you know, strive to ascend and someday be worthy of being brought up to high level. So that's kind of the setting for the story. And 13, despite her reservations, does take on the mission. And from there, as I said, things kind of ramp up in a hurry. So it's a really, really great title. I love the voice, the unique voices that Rob Sheridan gives, both to kind of the faceless fascist regime that's hunting for this this childlike messiah Minnow, and 13, because 13 is escorting her. And again, it's a little cliched, but it suits the narrative extremely well. It in that way, the people that are chasing this, as I said, somewhat fascist-like regime, reminds me of kind of the powers that be in oh my god, I'm totally blanking on the Logan's Run, that super classic sci-fi movie with Michael York. That's kind of what the bad guys in this remind me of, that sort of faceless mechanism of persecution and judgment, and that exists in a lot of movies, really. Like V for Vendetta is another one where there's sort of like this, you know, fascist regime that is looking to dictate and decide how everyone lives their life. So that's kind of what 13 is up against as she tries to take Minnow back to the safety of a high level, whether it exists or not. And as I said, 13 didn't want to do it, but she was basically given an offer that she couldn't refuse. So in this issue two, the action really picks up relatively quickly. There's a lot of great character moments. You can see the bond starting to form between Minnow and 13, and that's kind of heartwarming at times. There's a really funny scene with Minnow and 13 trying to fall asleep that any parent will be able to relate to. And so I think overall, it's a really, really great issue, worthy of the series. And it escalated so quickly. I'm not sure how many issues Rob has planned, but the journey does look like it's going to be somewhat long and arduous. So it doesn't surprise me that 13 and Minnow are well on their way, kind of on their adventure. They're on the road quickly. But I will say there's something that happens toward the end of the issue that is going to make it much harder for 13 and Minnow to reach their destination. And I understand why Rob did what he did, but at the same time, you know, there are a few times where you kind of have to do things that are a little cliched in service to the story. But I did feel like this was one of those where it kind of bothered me a little bit. And again, like I said, I understand why Rob had to do it this way, but at the same time, I just felt like, oh, that's a plot point. That's a story point that I've seen done over and over and over. And when you see something like that, it just, you can't help, at least for me, I can't help but not necessarily look down on it, but just think, oh, here we go again. Oh, it's this happening again, right? Like, oh, of course it is. And it kind of pulls me out of the story a little bit, just because we have seen it done, you know, countless times in other stories. So, you know, I'm not going to beat Rob up over it too much, because again, I understand why he had to do that. And this is his first comic work. It'll be interesting to see, because I think he's super talented. So it'll be interesting to see him grow as a writer, if he just continues to do more comic work, and see if next time he can kind of avoid doing that and think of an original way to still put his characters in the place they need to be without borrowing from like tropes and cliches that we've seen so many times before. But as I said, it's a really minor nitpick. Overall, I really enjoyed the issue. This is like one of my favorite series on stands right now. And it's just so interesting, the world that he's created from the technology to the weird way things have evolved, the robots, 13 as a character, from what I see of Minnow, she looks like she's going to be a really fun character, kind of a touchstone in terms of emotion, a little bit of a point of view character, and she's also going to inject some humor, some levity into the story, so that's always welcome as well. So yeah, the artwork by Barnaby Bagenda, really outstanding. The only thing I can ever remember seeing him do before was the Omega Men miniseries a few years back with Tom King, which was pretty good, and I thought the art in there was above average. But I don't know what Barney's has been doing in the meantime, but this art is outstanding. It is so well done. You know, the fact that Barnaby's getting to draw this post-apocalyptic world, you know, the different gadgets, the way things have been scavenged together, some things are recognizable as what they used to be, but they're totally repurposed, and that's fun. And then on top of that, incredible pencil work, you put Romulo Fajardo Jr., who's one of the best color artists working today, and it makes for a really visually pleasing book. And especially in terms of colors, Romulo, this is a relatively bright book. And when you hear post-apocalyptic, and really how Rob likes to describe it is post-apocalyptic, because the disasters happened, everybody's survived, and society's been put back together. And so now, you know, now we're on the next step, so to speak. But when you usually hear that, you think like, you know, a muted color palette, everything's kind of dark and gritty or dreary. And this is not that at all. It's very brightly colored, and it feels like a world that has recovered. And it's just, you know, a little bit different, a little bit, you know, the values are a little different, the way people view the world, the way they interact with each other. It's just skewed from what we know. But again, it's not that feeling that the world's run down and the world's about to end, as indicated by these you know, browns and grays and what have you. This is a world that has to some extent recovered. You know, there's plenty of growth, there's plenty of green, and a lot of bright colors. And again, it helps give this book a very unique tone and feel. So really, really enjoyed issue two. I think issue one sold out. So if you do need issue one, I know it's available on Comixology digitally. And we also did a spotlight on issue one previously. So if you want to listen in as I literally go like page by page, nearly panel by panel, and break down issue one, I encourage you to do that as well. So what do you have up next, Manny?
Up next, DC Comics, Justice League number 20. This is the second part of the Sixth Dimension, written by Scott Snyder and Jorge Jimenez, and artwork also by Jorge Jimenez, with Alejandro Sanchez on colors. And so before we get into it, do we talk about how awesome those three interlocking covers are to make that amazing battle of the Superman in front of the Hall of Justice?
Yeah, Jorge Jimenez.
Yeah. Just fantastic artwork. Love it. Bright. I mean, all the characters are on there that we're dealing with. Kind of gives away what's coming up forward, so it takes away a little bit from the issue, but I mean, granted, we all know it's coming. I don't think anyone's really at this point fooled by what's going on in issue 20.
Hey everybody, Jace here. I just wanted to give a fair warning. Manny gets a little spoilery in this Justice League review, and I know some of you guys don't like that. I mean, it's not too terrible, but I just thought in the interest of full disclosure, we'd let you know that and tell you that if you want to skip forward to the 58-minute mark, you can not be spoiled at all.
So with that, issue 20. So issue 19, we saw that they were introduced to the Sixth Dimension, where they supposedly have already defeated the Legion of Doom and solved all the problems, and now they are happy and in peace to the point where the Hall of Justice is now more of a museum type place to honor their legacy. And throughout the issue, we see that the characters pretty much go out with their counterparts from the sixth dimension. Wonder Woman goes with Wonder Woman to Themyscira, and they start talking about how they're opening up. And then Batman goes with Batman. And I've seen it everywhere, so it's not really a spoiler. But we meet the sixth dimension's Batman's current partner, which is a little bit ridiculous, but not so much, I guess, if you've been reading Justice League. This was something you found super hilarious. Jarro is currently serving Batman as Robin, and he is, according to Snyder's words, or Jimenez's words, or both, his favorite ever. would I like to see more adventures of Batman and Jarro? Yes, actually. Now I'm curious. You guys did this, now make it happen. Other thing going on at the same time, back on Earth in the Hall of Justice, something weird is going on with McPillix, and the only ones left to figure out what's going on are actual Jarro, Mira, and Starman. So that's an interesting little twist there. Other than that, we have Martian Manhunter and Hawkgirl going off with their counterparts to the hub that is now Black Hawk Island, and how they're together with the sixth dimension versions of them. It's kind of strange. Martian, and then there's just a lot to look at and how their sixth dimensions world works. But a lot of questions also get raised by the current heroes, because everything seems a little too good to be true, which we know, I'd say 99% of the time it is, and then, things go south really, really quick. Some interesting twists with Batman, which I'm not going to reveal, which makes for, I wonder how that's going to play out, how Bruce is going to feel about those things. And then also, current Superman, who's nowhere to be found with this league, and no one's asking why, which is interesting. But I guess he's told everyone in the last issue that he in fact is just Superman but older, when we know that last issue we had left him somewhere in the dark. Super solid issue. Not action heavy, but it moves the plot along pretty much, and kind of gets us ready for some action more than likely in the next issue. And so it will be a really, really good issue 21 going forward. It's really fun to look at. I love the artwork in this book, love the colors. And I think that's what I enjoyed the most, even though, like I said, it just kind of set the mood of what the sixth dimension is and how our heroes are going to have to fight or smart their way out of it, so they can actually figure out how to save their world. I'm not sure if you got to read it yet, Jace. Oh yeah, you did. You had to have, because you were the one who brought up the Jarro thing to me.
Yeah, I checked it out. So, I enjoyed it. I'm very curious to see what happens next. Just based on the last page, very curious.
Yeah, I'm gonna tell you that artwork is the artwork with the colors is done really, really, really well. And then two pages before that, there's that large panel of Superman flying upwards that I thought was just done super, super well. I mean, just with the tone of his, where he's at, and the color, I just thought it was done really well.
Yeah, I agree. It's just when you think it can't get better or maintain, you've got to have an issue that's down in quality or doesn't come with a ton of surprises, then it doesn't happen, right? It continues to be an incredible title. So Yeah, it's looking forward to talking to Scott at WonderCon. Probably be off the record, but looking forward to talking to him about just how good Justice League has been. So, all right, up next for me, we're heading to the end now. I think there's only one more issue. So the next book I'm going to talk about is Damage number 15 from storytellers Aaron Lopresti and Robert Venditti. Again, it's one of the New Age of Heroes titles, so it is in the Marvel method, so to speak, where basically Aaron and Rob talk about the story, talk about the plot. Aaron goes and draws it, so he has a lot to do with the pacing of the story and the way the action flows, just in terms of how he draws it, and then hands it off to Rob, and then Rob goes and creates the script. So rather than working from a full script where, you know, page one, panel one, this happens, this is said, page one, panel two, this happens, this is said, instead they're working backwards. So, and Aaron Lopresti is the perfect artist for the series. I've said it all along. Damage on Monster Island, if you haven't been following along, which it just gives Lopresti a chance to kind of spread his wings and have a lot of fun drawing these crazy monsters and Damage fighting them. And it's just a really fun, fun book. So those two handling the stories, Aaron on the pencils, inks are by Matt Ryan, colors are by Hi-Fi, and letters are by Tom Napolitano. So, again, it's been a really, really fun title. I didn't want to mention who showed up last time in issue 14 because I didn't want it to be a spoiler. I wanted it to be a surprise. But hopefully you've read it and you'll now know that the supposed game warden of Monster Island is Congo Bill. So if anybody can relate to kind of having this raging monster inside them or turning into this, you know, raging monster they can't control, it's Congo Bill, right? And the golden gorilla that he turns into. So Batman always has a plan, and he didn't just deposit Damage on Monster Island to sort of throw him away and forget all about him. Now he wants him to gain some perspective and some knowledge and learn to live with his alter ego, Damage and Ethan Avery, for them to get along. And there's no better teacher than Congo Bill in Batman's eyes. So a really, really fun issue. I'm going to be sad to see this title come to an end. I feel like with Lopresti on the title, he and Robert Venditti are really hitting their stride. And as I said, this title is just a whole heck of a lot of fun. And being able to see giant monsters, Damage go toe-to-toe with them, it's really cool. So I mentioned last time after issue 14 that I hope Damage doesn't disappear. We've said that a lot with a lot of the different New Age of Heroes. Felt the same way about Derek James Sideways. You know, hope that he shows up somewhere else as well. But much like I mentioned when we were talking about the last issue of Sideways, what I wouldn't want is for Damage or Ethan Avery to show up in another title with another writer writing him, and then just like I said with Derek James, throw out everything that's happened, throw out all the characterization and all the work Robert Venditti has done, and have him act completely different. Because Ethan is a very unique, he's a unique person in the DC universe in terms of, first of all, his powers, the fact he's only damaged for an hour at a time, and then he's got to wait 23 hours before he can change again. But also just in terms of the sacrifice he made, and kind of how he got taken advantage of when he was basically created, and or the Damage aspect of him was created, and the responsibility he feels, the guilt he feels. He's not your you know, prototypical hero. He's been used far too much by the powers that be as a weapon, like a point and shoot weapon, and so that colors his outlook on everything, and that needs to be a part of his character no matter who is writing him. So as I said, just like Sideways, just like Derek James, if Damage does show up somewhere else, I want to be sure that whatever writer is writing him, they've read all of these issues, they've read all the work that Robert Venditti has done, and they respect it, and they you know, obviously they're gonna give their own spin and their own take on the character, but there needs to at least acknowledge these aspects, because I think they're so core to the character this guilt that he feels, this responsibility that he feels for the things that he knows that he's done. Even if, you know, it wasn't necessarily his decision, he nonetheless, he did them, and he feels responsible. So, and like I mentioned, Aaron Lopresti, I wish he'd been on this book right from the start. And if he had, I feel like it wouldn't be getting canceled right now, because you can just tell he's having a whole heck of a lot of fun illustrating this book. It comes through in the art. Matt Ryan does a great job on the inking, keeps Lopresti's rendering and his lines really, really clean. And the colors by Hi-Fi, you know, Brian and Christy Miller, very primary, very traditionally superheroic. So that all works really well also. And I know you, did you read any Damage beyond issue one, Manny?
No, I didn't. I meant to, because you kept talking about it. And
true to your word.
I never got to it. I started reading Sideways instead. And then I got distracted with a couple other titles, and then it just never happened.
Yep. It's all right. You didn't like the first issue. You probably wouldn't have liked it. But definitely is not the Incredible Hulk. Wildly different from that. Although I will say, in fairness, Avery was sort of hounded and chased, just like the Hulk was at various times in the comic and certainly on the Bill Bixby TV show. So they had that in common also, but very different feel than the Incredible Hulk. So, all right, what do you have up next?
The last book I have, Batman 67, written, of course, by Tom King, with artwork by Lee Weeks and George Fornes. If that pairing all sounds together, sounds familiar, is because this is the same group that did the Elmer Fudd, Lee Weeks and Tom King, at least. The Elmer Fudd, the Batman Elmer Fudd special back in 2017, where Elmer Fudd and Batman kind of team up. So if you're going to bring back, that type of story, the Nightmares saga that Batman has been going through is probably the right spot, just because that's the only place it would make sense at this point. So part five of the Nightmares arc that is part of King's long story, 100-plus issue story, sees our favorite Caped Crusader on the top of a building, face-to-face with a trench coat wearing mask wearing hat perpetrator who seems to have just killed, at this moment we don't know who it is exactly. All we hear is the word beep beep. This is something that Tom King had prepared us for on Twitter a couple of weeks ago, as you know, they wanted to do a little bit more on that Batman Looney Tune universe that they had created with Porky's and some of those characters. And that was actually really well received issue. I think it was my for 2017, it was my pick for best single issue story. I have to go look, but I'm pretty sure that's the case. So the entire issue is one long chase with the words beep beep every now and then. They make a couple of stops at some different places, including Porky's. But it's just a ton of artwork of them chasing each other. And because of the twist at the end, and honestly, the ending of this book is the best part. I really would love to talk about it, but it gives away the entire issue, and I would not want to do that, but it the payoff at the end is great, I think, and it's done really well. A lot of symmetry there if you really think about it when it comes to the chase, and I really can't say much about it because it's a really, really simple story, And like I said, with a really good payoff at the end. And so as much as I've really enjoyed some of these nightmare issues, including this one, the one with Professor Pig, and actually last issues with Catwoman, I really want to go back to the actual story. I know this is part of it, but you know what I mean? Let's get back to what's going on with Bane and see how our Cape Crusader is doing, you know, back in reality. So definitely worth picking up. And if you enjoyed that Looney Tunes crossover, you are definitely going to enjoy this one as well.
Yeah, I really liked it too. The fact that it was one long chase was pretty cool. Hardly any dialogue. Just, yeah, really done really, really well. Up until the end. And then I was like, really?
It makes sense though.
That's fine. Makes sense or not make sense. I mean, how does anything make sense? He's having a nightmare. We don't even know exactly what's, either somebody's got him knocked out and this is how he's trying to escape the prison of his own mind. That's kind of what I'm thinking that the whole nightmares thing is. But just based on the fact that it's him having this nightmare, it could have been anything. It didn't have to be that, which it was, which, again, knowing Tom, knowing the story he's telling, like you said, it makes sense. But from my perspective, I just wish it was something else. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, I know, but there's a specific reason why you feel that way. But I even thought that the writing on that last issue, the way it ended, I was like, oh man, that was so good, good.
I just thought that last issue was great with the question. It was it was so meta. It was awesome. And then this issue starts off, and again, the artwork is so spectacular that this could have been one of those issues, and it could be an award-winning issue, and it very well may win awards. That's how good it is, because a lot of people aren't going to feel about the ending the way that I feel about the ending. It's more of a personal thing for me. So, and I get that. But I do agree with you. Okay, I'm ready for this nightmare thing to be. Like, I really wish Tom hadn't had to take those couple issues off, because I think we'd be done with this by now. This is starting to feel, this nightmare thing is starting to feel like it's dragging. And as much as I love Tom, it's like, okay, dude, we get it. He's, you know, dreaming. He's having nightmares. Can we move this along now? Let's go. All right, my last book is Naomi number 3 from Brian Michael Bendis, the aforementioned David F. Walker as co-writers. Jamal Campbell is handling the art, and that includes the color work. And then we have Wes Abbott on letters. So I had speculated before, I think I had mentioned this on the podcast, that I saw a theory online that Naomi and all her different friends and characters from her book might be the Legion of Superheroes. That would have been amazing had that been the case. I don't think that's the case based on the things that we find out in this issue. Unfortunately, I don't think that's the case. I can't really tell you about the things we discover this issue because obviously it would give it away. It would be total spoiler. But on the cover, even though it doesn't happen a lot these days, there's actually dialogue. There's actually word balloons on the cover with Naomi saying, just tell me, who am I? So she does get some secrets revealed about the town that she lives in. She doesn't necessarily find out who she herself is. She does learn a little bit about her parents, learns a little bit about her town. And it looks like we're going to get a lot more of that information in the next issue, because there's one thing we know, it's that Brian Michael Bendis is, you know, king of the cliffhanger, and he can't give away too much too fast. And in fact, I think if he wasn't writing with David F. Walker, we'd know even less. Like, this is only issue 3, and we're already starting to get some answers, as opposed to like his Superman run where we're on, I don't know, issue, if you count the Man of Steel stuff, we're on issue like 15. Or 16, and we still don't have any answers to any of his plot threads. So I am glad that this seems to be moving at a little bit of a quicker pace than some of Bendis's other stories. But what really for me makes this book special is the artwork by Jamal Campbell. His panel layouts, the layouts of the panels within the book itself, like on the pages, the way he lays out his pages, the way he makes use of the gutters, the textures. It's not always just, you know, white background. You know, like traditionally, you see a comic book page laid out. You have the panels, and then the space between the panels, they're called gutters. And normally, that's just white, right? You have your panels, and you have your gutters. Panels have color. The gutters are white. No, not here. Here, sometimes the gutters are black. Sometimes the gutters have like a checkerboard pattern. He's constantly challenging himself. He's constantly mixing things up to keep it visually interesting. And that's on top of the incredible line work that he does. And because he colors himself, I think his art has even more impact. And yeah, it's really like next level stuff and absolutely incredible. I think that this is going to be the book that really puts Jamal Campbell's name on the map. I don't think he's worked on anything as high profile. And it's not like Naomi is some household name and everybody knows who she is. I mean, it's a brand new character. But the fact that he's working with Brian Michael Bendis, Wonder Comics has been getting a lot of press, a lot of positive press, and deservedly so. And so I think a lot of people are discovering Jamal Campbell's artwork, and I expect him and his profile to rise exponentially based on how incredible this title has been. And then as far as the story that Bendis and Walker are telling, like I said, it's really interesting. It's really fun. It's compelling also is probably the best way that I could put it. As I said, we got some answers here, some reveals that kind of raise more questions and really are going to have people reading it and then immediately wanting the next book. And that's on top of sort of the unique character that Naomi seems to be in terms of her origin, which, you know, we don't know what it is yet. But I do like the fact that, you know, it's a female lead. It's a person of color. It's a young lead. Those are all aspects of character that I feel like we don't necessarily have enough of in comics. As much as you hear people complain about that and say it's tokenism, I don't feel that way. I think there needs to be stories with a wide variety and a diversity of main characters, because that's how you bring in more readers. And I'm always an advocate to bring in more readers, but you need to have stories with main characters where these readers come on and they can say, oh, look, that's me. That's a main character that is my same age or my same ethnicity or looks like me in that way. Make it relatable for them. Because nobody wants to just read about straight white guy superheroes when they're not a straight white guy, right? So it's a matter of representation. It's a matter of wanting your book and your story to resemble the world outside your window in some way, right? So that's part of the reason I like Naomi as a character. And for all the people that are complaining about when Marvel does stuff like this, I mean, the first one that immediately comes to mind is Riri Williams. She has a lot in common if you compare her to Naomi, you know, close in age, female, African-American. But the big problem so many people had with Riri Williams is like, wait, so you took Tony Stark off the stage to instead substitute her with this young female black character, and people didn't like that. And I get that, right? Like, if Tony Stark's your favorite character, you know, you might not be really excited about that. I don't know that you should get that upset about it. It is just a comic book, and you still have decades and decades worth of Tony Stark stories you can read. But whatever, I get it. The argument a lot of people would make is like, yeah, we're not necessarily against Riri Williams per se. It's just that we love Tony Stark. Why can't we have both? Like, if you want to have a young female African-American character, then create one that's, you know, on her own rather than co-opting another identity. Well, that's exactly what Brian Michael Bendis and David F. Walker and Jamal Campbell have done here. They didn't, you know, change Wonder Woman or Starfire or Batman or whoever, right? They didn't try to add diversity by co-opting another identity. And I think it makes for a stronger character, because then this you know, Naomi isn't a replacement for somebody else. She isn't like a second class Green Lantern, let's say, you know. Like some people would say, well, yeah, Riri Williams is a lesser version of Iron Man for, you know, whatever reason you want to, because she's female or because she's young or because she's African American, whatever excuse you want to give. You kind of diminish the character in a lot of people's eyes when you do those kind of things, because again, they see them as a lesser version of that classic character. So I'm glad that that's, as far as we know, because again, we don't 100% know what Naomi's origin is or who she is. God, could you imagine if DC did something terrible like that, like come to find out Naomi is Wonder Woman or something like that? And before you think that's too crazy, remember, there was a story in the Silver Age where Lois Lane appeared on the cover as an African-American woman, and she used one of Superman's crazy Silver Age machines to turn herself into a black woman so she could write a story about what it was to be black and female. Like, that would never fly these days. There's no way. So I'm pretty sure Naomi isn't Wonder Woman, but like that would be like a worst case, you know, not Wonder Woman. I mean, any other character, Black Canary or whoever, right? That would be awful. So I don't think that's what it is. I sure hope not. But she is a really, really interesting character, and I'm really enjoying this book. As I said, the artwork is next level, and yeah, it's really, really, really good. And I had not yet decided on my book of the week when I started this, and it's a tough call. But I think I am gonna go with Naomi number 3 here as my book of the week, just because of how tightly paced it is, how gorgeous the artwork is, and how it's really building quite quickly, especially for a Brian Michael Bendis book, to a climax. Middle West is a really, really close second, though. Definitely recommend picking that up as well. So, have you been reading Naomi, Manny?
Yeah, that would have been great.
You already checked out issue 3?
Yeah, issue three was really, really good. I didn't expect to get that much emotion conveyed through the panels as much as I did. Just I kind of felt bad as Naomi's questioning the guy. And I mean, she keeps poking and prodding, and I'm just like, there got to a panel where I was like, just leave him alone for a minute. Like, he's obviously shook by what you're asking him, and he doesn't seem to have a bad motive. It's funny because he looks like this really mean bad guy, whatever, tattoos and everything, but like the way that they give him his facial expressions, he's a big softy, and he has a tragic past in his inside of him, and the artwork, it helps a lot. Like, so, you know, definitely I agree with what you were talking about. So yeah, I did not expect to get that much kind of emotion out of it from that character, and then kind of has that roller coaster ride of information that we're getting. And it's funny because we get information, but we don't, and I'm not sure exactly where we're at. So I'm really looking forward to see, you know, what more puzzle pieces we get in issue 4, which is a great way of storytelling, because I mean, I don't want to know everything in one issue, and just kind of the way we're just getting pieces of it. And, you know, we're kind of struggling to figure everything out, just like the main characters in the book, I think is really cool. And yeah, I definitely agree with you with the panel layouts, how everything, how some of them are so different from each other, and the guys that you're talking about. The only one who I know who has done it recently a similar way, who I thought was doing things like that really clever, was Mitch Garrett on Mr. Miracle. and that was cool. So yeah, this the whole book has been done really, really well.
Yeah, I really thought that big guy, you know, again, I just to go back to the theory that it's a Legion of Superheroes here. I thought that this guy was Block, you know, the big hulking rock guy from Legion of Superheroes. I mean, it kind of looks like him, but a human version. But yeah, I guess that's not the case. At least we're being told that's not the case. I mean, again, we don't know the full truth yet, but hopefully it's coming next issue. So all right, let's give a rundown on some of the other titles you might want to be on the lookout for today in your comic shops. We talked about Dark Arc number one. The other Aftershock title I want to mention that's in shops today is Stronghold number two, from Phil Hester and oh my God, why am I blanking on the and Ryan Kelly? I was blanking on the other collaborator there for a second. Over at Boom, we have Adventure Time, Mercy and Simon, number 3 of 6. Halfway through that story, and I mentioned it because I know Adventure Time the cartoon came to an end, and I wonder how long they're going to keep making Adventure Time comics. If I don't know how long Boom agreed, you know, how long their licensing deal is. And so I'm just curious if these are going to keep coming out and they're going to keep telling new Adventure Time stories. It may bring readers to comics. That would be really, really cool. Cause again, you can't get your Adventure Time content from the TV anymore, from the cartoons, since they're not around. So, over at DC, we have Aquaman number 46, which was pretty solid. It wasn't a big chunk of story, but very interesting what Kelly Sue DeConnick is doing on Aquaman. We also have Electric Warriors number 5 of 6 from Steve Orlando. That's been a really great title as well. Not sure how that one's all going to wrap up, but very curious. Also, Nightwing number 58. With co-writing credit from our boy Zach Kaplan. Haven't read that yet, but I read the previous issue and I really enjoyed it, issue 57, because it was Zach's first work on Nightwing's first DC work. But I haven't read any Nightwing since like issue 9, and I want to be caught up, so I really want to just try to power through as much Nightwing as I can and start reading it, especially because I think Scott Lobdell is going to leave as co-writer and it's going to be just Zach working on the title. But again, that's just a guess on my part. I haven't actually asked Zach about that. So we'll see. If that's the case, I definitely need to get caught up. Also from DC, Wildstorm number 21, as that series only has 3 issues left, and I don't know how Warren Ellis is going to wrap up everything in 3 issues. This was a relatively fast-paced issue in terms of setup. It feels like he's moving all the pieces around, so I could see him continuing to do that maybe for the first half of the next issue at the most. But after that, we're going to have to start seeing some climax, some resolution, and otherwise he's just not going to have time to tie everything up. Unless it ends on some sort of cliffhanger, or we don't get a resolution, or any kind of, we get a resolution, but then that's it, right? And we don't get any kind of follow up, any kind of little epilogue to kind of know where everybody ends up. So yeah, I guess we'll see. That's been an incredible title. I'm looking forward to Wildstorm finishing up so I can go back and like read it all in one sitting. And, you know, once it's all laid out, probably be able to get even more out of it. There's a new Dungeons & Dragons title from IDW out today. Dungeons & Dragons, A Darkened Wish, number 1. So I know there's a lot of Dungeons & Dragons fans out there. I feel like it has more interest and it's more popular than ever before. I know there's that Critical Role web series where these voice actors get together and play, and now they're even doing cons, and people are just fanning out, you know, fangirling and fanboying out, getting to meet them. and also Die from Kieran Gillen and Stephanie Hans has been selling like gangbusters, and so I feel like that's helped to bring renewed interest to Dungeons and Dragons. So I don't actually know anything about this Darkened Wish, which Dungeons and Dragons world it's set in. Does it involve people playing Dungeons and Dragons or just set in a Dungeons and Dragons world? Have no clue. So speaking of Die number one, there is a fourth printing out from Image today. So if you haven't been able to snag yourself a copy, maybe you'll be able to do that today. Also, Lazarus Risen number one, which is now a quarterly book. So it's like basically an 80-page giant. It's $7.99. It's from Greg Rucka and Michael Lark, and they're going to put them out once every 3 months. I covered Lazarus number one on a New Comics Wednesday a couple of weeks back when I first got the preview copy. I highly recommend it. I recommend all the Lazarus stuff. The back matter is exquisite. You can tell that Greg Rucka has put a lot of thought, a lot of effort into building out this world. And not only do you get it through sort of the context of the main story that he's telling about the Lazarus of the Carlyle family forever Carlyle, but also in that back matter where you can, as much effort as you want to put into exploring the back matter, you're going to get that much more out of the main stories because it really helps flesh out the world. We also have from Image Middle West number 5, which I talked about, Monstrous number 21 from Marjorie Liu, which I've never read, but I hear so many good things. And obviously, she's won Eisner, she's won Harvey Awards, so at some point I'm definitely going to have to pick that up. And then from Marvel, there's always tons of Marvel books out, right? But surprisingly enough, they don't have another Age of X-Men number one. We're finally getting the second issues of some of these titles. So we have the second issue of Next Gen, the second issue of The Amazing Nightcrawler. We have the sixth issue of 10 from The Avengers No Road Home weekly storyline. The new Captain Marvel title is up to number 3. Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man is up to number 4 from Tom Taylor and Juan Cabral. That title is outstanding. But I don't know if that this is because of just how well the Into the Spider-Verse movie did for Spider-Man. But I just read an article recently or saw a headline where there's like something like 23 Spider-Man titles coming out in May. Like not titles, but 23 Spider-Man issues, which is just insane. And when I look here, I see we have the Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. We have Spider-Man City at War number one. And we have Spider-Man Life Story number one. And I don't know, it's just a lot of Spider-Man. And that Spider-Man Life Story one does look interesting, though, because that's the one where supposedly Spider-Man ages in real time. So I am curious about that one. And that one's written by Chip Zdarsky. So, yeah, I'm just worried that we're going to have too much Spider-Man. It's going to be spider overload. But I guess we'll see. It almost feels like when the Iron Man movie first came out and we had 13 Iron Man titles, it was just too much. Also, Uncanny X-Men is up to number 14, written by Matthew Rosenberg, art by Salvador LaRocca. So looking forward to that. And the second issue of Wolverine Infinity Watch is also out today. Finally, over at Valiant, Manny talked about Life and Death of Toya Harada number 1. We also have Exo Manowar number 25 from Matt Kent, and also the second issue of Incursion from Andy Diggle and Alex Pacnadel with art by Doug Braithwaite. And if you want more information on Incursion, I encourage you to go back and listen to our Valiant Sunday episode where Jesse and I, spoiler-free, talked about the second issue and what you can expect. So a lot of great titles out this week as always. Anything else you want to mention, Manny, that I may have missed?
No, I think you got it all.
All right. Well, once again, we want to remind you that this episode has been brought to you by Aftershock Comics. Be sure and go to aftershockcomics.com where you can find series descriptions, synopsis, creator lineups for all their titles. They also have links at the website to go and buy the books digitally from Comixology. And as we said, tons of great creators right from the start at Aftershock, from Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor, Garth Ennis, Paul Jenkins, just so many great established creators. And then you have the next generation of creators that are also doing books there. Steve Orlando, Marguerite Bennett, Donnie Cates, Zach Thompson, and Lonnie Nadler. Again, such a wide variety of creators, a wide variety of stories. They're constantly coming out with new content, new titles that stretch the genres of superheroes, horror, westerns, you name it. They have a title that will fill your need. Haven't done straight up romance yet, but it wouldn't surprise me if it comes at some point. Although we did have Insects, which was a little bit of a romantic story, but more body horror than anything from Marguerite Bennett, with absolutely spectacular art. So again, really encourage you to go to aftershockcomics.com to check out their titles, and be sure to listen to our Aftershock Mondays every week for reviews on the books, previews of upcoming Aftershock titles, as well as creator interviews. So that's going to do it for this episode. Don't forget to be following us on social media for more WonderCon news and details about all the giveaways we're going to be doing throughout the weekend at WonderCon. And I'm excited to get out there. This is going to be my first convention of the year. I was supposed to go to Long Beach, but in February, but it didn't work out. So yeah, just so busy. It's going to be nice to get away from the day job for a few days and just kind of geek out, see friends, see creators, and hopefully bring all you guys a lot of content from sunny California. All right. Anything else you want to add, Manny?
Nope. We're good today.
All right, everybody. We'll talk to you next time. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. The Comic Source is a member of the LRM Podcast Network, so when you visit the site, be sure to check out some of our other podcasts like Los Fanboys, our official movie and TV podcast hosted by Joseph Jammer Medina, Netflix and Chill, hosted by Nick and Carrie, covering a wide variety of film and television topics with Game of Thrones and Star Wars as particular favorites. And finally, Mike and Mark's Marvelous Adventures, as these two former athletes share their love of sports and geek culture by chatting about anything and everything sports and geek related. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.